I'm Susan Charles, and I was born and raised in Bethel. I was born in 1951, right around the time when John was born. So we grew up knowing each other as children and then now as adults. He was 2 years older than I am. Yeah, old as my older sister.
How did you know John? Were you neighbors with each other?
I was in the neighborhood, and we all were in a little, like a gang. We were, you know, not a bad gang. We were all, you know, close families and neighbors, and we all played together. Mm-hmm. It's like lap game and kick the can and over the wall, those different kind of games.
So you lived across the slough?
We lived across the slough. It's the older part of town, and John lived closer up the Brown Slough with his grandmother and grandfather, Adolf and Maggie Lynn. So we were, you know, up the street from him.
And so it sounds like there was like a whole group of kids in the neighborhood. What was that like?
Oh, it was fun. There was my sisters and I. My two sisters were twins and myself. Our neighbors were the Hoffmans, Sally Hoffman, Bobby, and Gregory Hoffman. The Samuelson triplets, Linda and Lorraine, and Howard Samuelson. Up the street further were the other Samuelson children. And on the other side of the sloughs was the Across the Slough gang. We really just stuck with our group of kids, and then we had other friends as we grew older and went to school.
So you just knew John your whole life, like as soon as you came aware, yeah. He was there.
John was always there. We all grew up as, you know, small children. When we started playing outside, he was there with his brothers, all his active brothers. You know, there was four or five of them.
What was John like as a kid?
Oh, he was so much fun. John used to organize us. He was like a leader, and he'd organize games, and like we would play monsters, and he'd always designate who the monster would be, and just make scenarios. Like he would reenact different things from movies, like horror movies we used to watch at Swanson's Theater. He loved Vincent Price and Peter Lorre, all those old actors, and he'd recreate the scenarios, and we all had different roles to play. It was so much fun.
So he was usually like the director of these productions?
He was always the director of these productions, and then we'd make up different really funny scenarios. And we used different characters from the community, as like Sarge used to be the commissioner, or the commissioner and Sarge used to drive around and do patrols and make sure all of us kids were home. And we'd make up scenarios about getting caught, and then we'd make up little pretend jails, and he would catch each other in jail. It was so much fun, all summer long.
So it sounds like on one hand, it's kids playing and being imaginative and wanting to be with each other. But I'm wondering if there was an added element of John like already showing signs of like being an entertainer in that aspect.
Yes, he was. He would make up scenarios and tell jokes and just make up stories and make us laugh so hard. It was so funny. He was so entertaining to be with. We just loved having him around. And we always went, he always came to our house, and we'd always go to each other's different houses and play games. And even as teenagers, we'd play table games. We love to play Monopoly and Scrabble and cards and that sort of thing. We didn't have television, so we always made up things to play and keep ourselves entertained. We had games at school, basketball. That's how we grew up. You know, we had church. We'd go to each other's services. I'm Catholic, and we even went to Moravian and Russian Orthodox services. And he'd even pretend to have services. He'd be like the preacher, and even the crucifixion, he reenacted that from the Bible. He loved Bible stories.
Will you describe what the crucifixion reenactment was like?
Oh, he'd have his brothers pretend to be hanging on a cross and would be the audience and they'd be like a Roman soldier. He even wrote a Yupik creation story from Old Tales that sounded very much like the Bible. And that actually, he published that story. It was published in the Alaska Magazine, the Yupik creation story.
Did you ever go over to his house where you saw Maggie Lind there telling stories?
Yeah, we all went into each other's homes. All of us kids would go into their house. We didn't play a lot in their house because they were older. But John would come out and we'd play in the yard. And she used to tell stories in the mud too. You know, the Yaguin stories. Mm-hmm. They were all taboo type stories. Al-Khutaks and In-Khutak stories on how to live, on how to treat each other. And a lot of it was how you lived with your grandmother or your grandfather.
The way I've heard Maggie Lind talked about is she was this really exceptional storyteller. Is that what you remember?
She was a very gifted storyteller. She told all kinds of stories, and she was very expressive in describing stories, like the how the crane got blue eyes is one story I remember her telling.
And I remember John telling that story, mm-hmm. too. Would he, as a kid, retell Maggie Lind stories?
Yes, he told a lot of stories that she told. She was very prolific, and she tells stories to, like all us girls, she'd tell the story in the Yaguin story with the story knife in the mud.
Did you see similarities in the way that Maggie Lind told stories and the way that John told stories?
I do, now that you mention it. Yeah, he was very expressive in describing, you know, tales and stories, like she was. Very fun, very entertaining.
I remember John he had this very distinctive style when he would tell a story. You know, his voice, every part of his body was telling the story. And I'm wondering if he may have picked that up from her, like his eyes, his voice, his body.
I'm sure he did. We also used to watch a lot of movies back then at the Old Swanson's Theater. And he used to tell really scary, scary stories. And like I mentioned before, the Vincent Price old movies, really, really scary stories, and ghosts, old ghost stories. He was very good at telling very scary ghost stories. We used to build a little campfire and tell stories around the campfires in summer nights. It was so much fun. He was very expressive, and I know he picked that up from Maggie and all the, you know, old movies we used to watch too. And he used to read a lot of books, too, in comics. We used to read comics a lot.
I talked with Bev Hoffman, too, and she talked about going to school with John. And something she mentioned was in school they were reprimanded for speaking Yupik, but yet John, that was so much part as an adult, his identity, I know, at least. Do you remember that in school and what that was like?
Well, we weren't encouraged to speak Yupik, and when I first started school, I didn't speak any English. We had to learn how to speak English, and we used to pretend to speak in English too. We'd be playing around, and English to us sounded like this: sitters. It was so weird. In Yupik, you really can't say the R's and the L's and the S sound. So in English, it all sounds like sound. So that's how it sounded to me.
That is so funny. And so in school, you said you weren't encouraged to speak Yupik, but you don't remember being like reprimanded for speaking Yupik.
No. I don't really remember being reprimanded, but I'm sure some other children were, especially ones growing up in boarding schools.
So what it was like probably was going to school, speaking English at school, then coming home and speaking Yupik, was that what it was like?
Yeah, we spoke English in school and spoke Yupik at home.
And then when you would get together as children, were you speaking Yupik?
I think we spoke both, because we were fluent in both, more so in Yupik at the time, yeah.
John, when he was older in school, like I heard he ran for class president in like eighth grade and got elected.
That. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was popular. John had friends. He made a lot of friends. Mm-hmm. And he was a leader, a natural leader. He just talked a lot, you know, and he was convincing. And he was fun. It was natural, you know, for him to be in that kind of position.
Was there any sort of, like, theater at school to participate in or, like, plays?
There was theater. There was, you know, in high school, kids could be in plays and productions. And then we used to practice Sepik dancing, too. Back then, John and I and some other kids used to help organize the dance practices, and put on dance performances. And John and I and my sisters, we actually helped produce the Eyes of the Spirit video. That's a video that talked about the revitalization of Yupik masks. And we set up the stage at the high school, and John and I built shangwok, which is the netting over the ceiling with the feathers, and even the little yikjok, which is the person hanging in the middle of the net. We used my granddaughter's doll and put a parka and boots on her. That's an old practice that they used to do in the old days.
I remember seeing John multiple times when he was watching Yuok. He would have this expression on his face of just being so overjoyed and like he was having so much fun that I never saw on his face at any other time. Did he have like a special connection to the dance?
Oh, I think so. Yeah. You know, we grew up as very young adults with the Bethel Native dancers, Bethel traditional dancers. In our SLU area, our parents and aunts and uncles were the drummers and singers and dancers. We grew up in that neighborhood, practicing dancing and performing.
From the adults in your life is who you were learning to dance from? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like my dad and my mom were both drummers and dancers. My dad was a drummer, and he was a mask maker. And our uncles in the neighborhood were drummers. Our aunties were dancers. Anna Chief, Lucy Arnakin, my Uncle Ben and Dan Charles, Joe Chief, Dick Andrew, you know, we were all in that neighborhood.
So when John started working for KYUK, he was in his early 20s and KYUK had kind of just gotten started. Do you remember talking with him at that time? Because what I remember is like he was pretty nervous to start talking on the radio. And I'm wondering if you remember him at the beginning.
I don't recall him being nervous, but I'm sure he got nervous, you know, like any normal person would probably. He always seemed so confident to me because he knew the story, he knew the songs, he knew the dances, he knew the people, he knew the events that were going on. You know, I don't know if he ever really was super scared. He did it, he just did it. He was just natural at it.
John, I mean, I only knew him the last 3 years of his life and I learned so much working with him. One, he was older at that time, but he, to me, was this, like, culture bearer who really, he loved telling stories and teaching people about Yupik and the culture. And he would, at KYUK, like, be like, I'm going to show you how to skin a beaver and cut fish. Mm-hmm. And just really passionate about teaching people about Yupik culture. Was that something that he grew into later in life, or do you remember him doing that younger?
No, we all did that. We all grew up doing that. We all learned how to hunt and fish early on because we were subsistence hunters and fishermen. We grew up fishing in the slough. We all used to fish for whitefish and then in the winter, lush fish and pike. And we'd go with our parents or grandparents or aunts and uncles hunting for moose and birds in the fall and in the spring. Going out picking berries and picking plants and greens, you know, in the summer. Mm-hmm. We all grew up like that. John learned a lot from his grandmother. She knew how to do everything like our parents did too. We all shared in that tradition.
What do you think their relationship was like, Maggie Lynn and John, from what you saw?
Oh, she just loved John. He was like a son to her. He was orphaned early And Elsie, Maggie's daughter, adopted him, but she actually raised him for most of his life. And he lived with them. And he had his own special little room and his bunk bed. And he was just treated like a little royal prince, you know. I remember her making him a cup of tea or cocoa and fixing him bread and putting his food at the table for him. He was the only child in the home.
So his brothers, where were they raised?
They were raised with Elsie and their dad in another home.
How did that work then, where Elsie was raising them, but John ended up living with Maggie and Adolf?
That was very traditional growing up. I used to spend a lot of time with my grandmother. We helped her. We'd live in her home, or we'd live at the fish camp with them. So it was very natural for Maggie to help raise John. And he grew up in both his adoptive home and with Maggie.
And did John wear, a couple people have mentioned, like he would wear sort of costumes, sometimes capes or like cowboy. What was he wearing?
He used to love to watch old cowboys and Indian movies too, like Dale Evans. And he used to reenact cowboy and Indians movies, and he'd wear costumes. Yeah, he'd put on a cape and whatever was required for that scene, you know, he'd make it up. We'd get a hold of cowboy hats and toy guns and that sort of thing.
So sort of jumping ahead, before KYUK started, as I understand, it wasn't the first local radio station because there was like the military one, is that right?
There was an old Air Force radio station in Anchorage or Fairbanks, and that's what we used to listen to. AFRN is what it was called. Alaska or Air Force radio station. And we used to listen to that. And we used to hear certain times of the week there'd be stories on the radio, and we'd listen to those. Of course, we'd listen to the music too.
But there was no YUPIC on that.
No YUPIC at that time.
So what was it like when KYUK came on board in terms of having a local radio station?
It was very exciting. It was a very creative time and an opportunity for people like John and other people to read news and in Yupik and talk in Yupik on the radio. There used to be the Tundra Drums where people would call in on in Yupik, and it was all in Yupik, different radio shows. John was right there.
Nowadays, like, it's seen as really special that there is Yupik spoken every day on KYUK. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering if at the beginning, if it was just seen as, oh, this is just the way it is. Or was it identified as, oh, this is really special at the time?
I think it was special at the time because most of it was in English. The news was in English, and then it just developed onto getting Yupik news. And John and people like Peter Twitchell and other people that were involved at the time started doing the Yupik. And then the television shows came on, and they had Yupik elders telling stories, and they'd do interviews. They were really involved in that, and I'm sure John was involved in saving a lot of the stories that aren't even told anymore.
So KYUK and John efforts like played a role in preserving culture?
Yes, I think so. I think John's efforts and Peter's and other people that were working there, I think they played a huge role in reviving the Yupik language and Yupik dance and Yupik practice. There was a lot of things that other Yupik people didn't know because they weren't raised like John or I were, you know. Maybe they only learned to speak English and just knew a little bit of Yupik. So they were very instrumental in preserving the language.
And was Maggie Lind, was she involved with the radio station as well?
Oh yeah, she was recorded telling stories, and I think there might even be some old video. And a lot of her stories John wrote, he wrote down. He had reams and reams of paper of stories he had written. And we always encouraged John to, you should write a book, John, you need to write a book. And I think he did start writing a book, but I don't know what happened to it. He was a very prolific writer. In high school, I recall him, he used to read me his stories. And they were so good. They were so wonderful.
It was amazing watching him work at the station because he would be like, I'm going to write a story. And then an hour later, he's written out this entire story so quickly. You know, like no one else could write as fast as he did.
Yeah, he was like that in high school. He used to write, and read. He had a lot of books and magazines. He was, you know, very involved in his creativity. And I was so happy to see how he turned out in helping us to preserve our culture and our traditions. A lot of young people my age didn't do that. I mean, they were going on to college or getting married and moving away. And, you know, and John stayed here. He stayed here and helped us.
It's interesting that, you know, as just the point in time, that intersection that happened with KYUK and John is like, KYUK was coming into being just as John was this young man, like needing a job, and how that just that moment in time came together.
It was like destiny, you know. I think it helped him to develop into the man he became. A very creative person, very deeply involved in culture, very loving human being. I mean, not only just being a Yupik person, just but being a human being. He was so kind and generous. Even, you know, before he died, he was sharing his native food with his neighbors.
Almost every day, or more days than not, John would bring food into the radio station. He just wanted to cook for people. Do you know when he started getting into cooking?
Oh, he loved to cook. Growing up, he used to put on these huge meals, and he'd write up the menu and decorate the menu. I still have some of those menus. Oh, he tried different things. Like one time he prepared orange duckling and these fabulous salads and different sides and desserts. He loved desserts. And as much as he cooked and as much as he ate, he never ever got fat. He said, "You have a hole in your foot," because he could eat. He could really eat. And Slavic time, he loved that because he could go house to house and be able to eat as much different kinds of native food as he wanted to. You know, and he loved to cook. He used to bring food to neighbors. We used to invite him to our homes to help us cook at holidays. And he was an excellent cook. He was very good. Mm-hmm. He had different recipes and sometimes he didn't want to share.
He was also really creative. He would say, like, I wanted to make bread, but I didn't have flour, so I used pancake mix and, like, threw in instant potatoes, and I made bread. Just really creative.
Yeah, John was creative in all things he did. He would try different things, whatever interested him. I remember when he made, recreated old Yupik artifacts, because we saw him in the museum, and he loved those old stories of the Angalkuks, the medicine people, and the different medicines. You know, he loved that mystery. He loved that mystery about Yupik culture. Anything challenging, he would try. You know, even if he failed.
What were these artifacts you were recreating?
Oh, different things. Like, I remember we saw something from the old Gwichluk finds in the museum. It was something to do with medicine. It was this very mysterious little human looking thing that had a little piece of crystal in it, and we used to just wonder what it was, and that just made his imagination soar. What were these things used for? What was behind the story? And he loved the old stories of the old missionaries too. He would tell the stories of, like, John Kilbuck, because he read his memoirs and the old mission memoirs. He was fascinating. Because he knew so much, and he'd tell us a story, and sometimes he would joke, and we couldn't tell if he was joking or if he was really telling the truth. And that was part of the fun. Mm-hmm. He'd like to pull one over on us.
Mm-hmm. How old was he when he was hosting those elaborate dinner parties?
Oh, we were older, you know, we were in our 20s. When he had his own home, his own place, he was able to put on these fabulous meals. Really nice.
So what I'm hearing is John just seems like he was always super creative, but also just super curious and trying to learn everything he could about this place.
Yeah, he was. nothing was out of bounds. If he was curious about it, he'd find out about it.
He seemed like he lived almost his entire life here in Bethel and went down to Anchorage for like small sections, but was mostly in Bethel. Did he always want to stay here, or did he ever talk about living somewhere else?
You know, I don't remember him wanting to move away, but he loved to travel. He was able to travel to different cities. I remember when he went to New York and Washington, D.C., you know, in different areas in the United States, in Anchorage or Fairbanks. Because he was always being invited. He was a speaker at different conferences. And I remember he spoke at a women's conference, and he made the whole audience cry because he told a story about his grandmother. He was so gifted. And then after he'd speak, he'd be surrounded by crowds and crowds of people wanting to talk to him.
He was so charismatic and personable at the same time. I mean, it sounds like he was always that way from what you were saying.
No, you know, he was human like the rest of us. We got mad and angry, and sometimes he and I didn't speak for months and months, or he wouldn't call me or answer my phone calls because he would be mad at me for something, or I'd be mad at him. Yeah, there was a lot of sad times too. We had a lot of losses. Our different friends and relatives would pass on, and he was right there at the memorial feasts and at the funerals. That's part of our tradition out here in practice. And yeah, he was in public. He was very friendly and outgoing. And he did have his sad times. You know, he had his dark moments.
John, of course, struggled with drinking. And several people have talked about how, you know, at the station, he would just disappear for a few weeks. And do you know what he was like during those times?
Yeah, I knew John during those times. There was a lot of things that happened, you know, when he would be drinking. And we always used to worry about him if we didn't hear from him in a while. And it would turn out that he had been on a binge. But somehow he'd just pull himself out of it. And he'd be up and at it, back in the, you know, in the limelight, like he loved. He loved that. He loved visiting. He had certain families that he had favorites that he'd love to stay with and go visit. And, you know, there's a part of him that was very private. It was his own business. Like his drinking was. I don't know if he ever got a handle on that or not. Mm-hmm. And I remember when he tried to quit smoking.
Oh my gosh.
That was really scary. Yeah, I don't think he ever quit smoking.
When did he start smoking?
I think they all smoked when they were young. I remember the gangs, the boys would pretend to smoke cigarettes. Because it was there, you know, it was right there. Mm-hmm. And people chewed. It was a common practice to be chewing ikmik. And he chewed ikmik and snuff. Yeah. And that's probably what kept him so skinny too. He had his dark moments and very heavy times, I'm sure. But the part I remember him is that part of him that was so out there and friendly and loving and kind.
So jumping back to John on KYUK, do you remember what it was like listening to him on the radio?
Yeah, we were always happy to hear his voice, you know, his very distinctive voice. He used to read the news. When he'd read the news in Yupik, he didn't like telling bad news. So, you know, he was very careful with the Yupik words he used to talk about the bad news.
I've been told that he would sometimes change the Yupik news.
Mm-hmm.
What would he add in or change?
Well, he'd make his own commentary sometimes, you know, he'd say that he didn't like it, for example. He might not like the story, but he had to tell the story. He had to describe what happened, but sometimes he wouldn't tell the details.
What kind of story would that be that he would say?
People being murdered or hurt, or he didn't like stories about child abuse, child sexual abuse. He didn't like that. Nobody does. He didn't like to tell the story about it.
So he would say, this is a story I don't want to tell. I don't like it. Here's what happened, but I'm not going to get into the details.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. He was more happy telling good news. He loved telling stories and telling the good news. You know, he liked to make people happy. He really did.
And what was his reputation around the region on KYUK? What did people say about him?
I think people were used to hearing him because he was there from the very beginning. And when he wasn't there on the radio, we missed him. I heard him when he was doing the talk show call-in shows, and he knew so many people. They knew him. They'd call him and talk to him. And they talked like they were old friends, even if he never saw them, you know, maybe more than once or twice a year. And he wasn't afraid to even insult people sometimes or tease them. He loved to tease. And even if you were not a person that he never met before, he'd really put them at ease by, you know, joking around with them.
Humor was something he was brilliant at and was so mm-hmm. important to him. How do you remember his sense of humor?
He was just a natural comedian. He just made us laugh all the time. And he would describe everyday events, normal events, and put him in such a funny picture, you know, like even walking down the street and running into somebody, or going to eat at a Slavic and make comments here and there. And it was so funny, so funny. Sometimes it twists the truth around to make it funny.
I've heard you say several times, like, he wasn't afraid to do this, he wasn't afraid mm-hmm. to do that. Did he? It sounds like he was really courageous in your eyes.
He was courageous in a lot of ways. He was. I don't think he was afraid of, you know, like I said, insulting certain people or saying some things to put him on the spot or challenging them. Well, it's almost like a Yupik tradition to tease. If you have a teasing cousin, for example, you can tease them really, really hard and they're not supposed to get mad at you. That's one of our practices, and I think that's how we learn how to control our anger. That's a Yupik practice and tradition, and he was really good at it. He might, like I was saying, insult somebody, but he'd also put them at ease too at the same time.
So towards the end, he had a series of strokes, and mm-hmm. it affected his ability to be able to translate, to be able to speak Yupik mm-hmm. after doing that. And it seems like really building his identity around that. Do you remember how he was handling that and reacting to that situation?
He kind of withdrew a little bit, and he wasn't so out there, you know. And I knew he was sick and getting sick or not feeling well or something was going on with him. Because I would call him and he wouldn't answer and send text messages or invite him over to eat. And because I'd make him certain special things for him that he liked, and he wouldn't respond, and I knew something was going on.
What special foods would you make for him?
Oh, he loved, like, lush heads, pike heads, stomachs, aguraks of all kinds, and he loved bread. He loved bread. All kinds of native foods, as long as it was cooked tender enough for him to eat, because he lost his teeth, you know. And he used to joke around, too, about wearing his dentures.
Sometimes he would have his teeth in at KYUK, and sometimes he wouldn't.
Sometimes he wouldn't wear them because they were uncomfortable, and he had to get them fitted. And he always wanted to look nice. He was very careful on his dress and the way he looked, and he always had his hair cut.
He would dye his hair.
Yeah, he always looked nice. Always wanted to be presentable.
When do you miss John?
Holidays, it was potluck, or he'd come over and cook. And he always made us feel special, like we were the only ones. But I knew he had lots of other friends. I was part of his pipeline of friends. And I miss him, I do. He was like a brother to me, a dear brother.